the 18th chapter is called as the Moksha Sanyasa Yoga. This the Prabhupada translate that as the perfection of renunciation. Conclusion of the perfection of renunciation. Now in the 17th chapter, Krishna talked about the status of those people who were in between on the tree of material existence. The top are the, on the upper side are the divine, the lower side are the demoniac. And in between are those who do not follow Shastra but have some kind of faith. So now Krishna will go back to the, Arjuna will go back to the essential starting question. Should he act or he not act? But he will phrase that question a little bit in technical terms. So let's start with that. And before we do that, let's look, have a look at the overview of this 18th chapter. So how it is a summary of all the chapters is more or less that it talks about karma, jnana, and it talks about bhakti, which are the three essential teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. So verses 1 to 12 talk about karma yoga. Essentially Arjuna's question will be, should one act or should one not act? And Krishna endorses action, and that action is karma yoga. And then Arjuna's original question was, if I act, I will become bound. So Krishna tells that actually you don't have to renounce action to become bound. You have to cultivate knowledge within your action. Then you will not become bound. So then Krishna will talk elaborately about the jnana of a karma yogi. How is it that action doesn't bind? Because the karma yogi has jnana. And he will present it from two different perspectives. So from verses 13 to 17, he talks about the five doers and how they are the five factors of action. Actually, maybe doers is not exactly the right word. It is not five factors of action. Maybe. So, what are the five factors that contribute to the shaping of a result? Of an activity. And then he goes into an elaborate analysis of action to talk about the three modes and how the action within the mode of goodness will not be binding. Now this analysis of the three modes is different from the analysis in the previous sections. First, in the 14th chapter, Krishna was introducing the three modes. In the 17th chapter, he was analyzing Shraddha based on the three modes. Now he is analyzing work based on the three modes. So they, although the, again and again analysis of three things will come, analysis based by three modes will come, but the context is different, and we, from the context we can see the purpose of that analysis is different. And then Krishna will talk about karma yoga offered to Krishna. That means it goes, it starts moving towards bhakti. Initially the jnana of a karma yogi is more analytical. It is just about how I am not the doer. It is not that, okay, what am I doing for Krishna? That jnana will evolve gradually. So that he talks about from verses 41 to 48. Where Krishna will talk about Swakarmana tam abhyarcha. By your work, worship him. And then 49 to 55 will talk about jnana yoga with bhakti to Krishna. That means the karma yogi eventually, he can come to bhakti directly, or he can renounce work temporarily, cultivate jnana. But even when he cultivates jnana, he will have to ultimately come to bhakti. So the idea is, from karma yoga, one can gradually rise through karma to bhakti. Other is by jnana yoga, one can rise to bhakti. Now somebody who wants from karma yoga, he can go to jnana yoga, and from jnana yoga come to bhakti. Or he can just through karma yoga go to bhakti. And then lastly, Krishna will say from 18.56 onwards, that you don't have to go either through karma yoga or to jnana yoga to come to bhakti. Directly practice bhakti yoga only. And that is the context in which he makes the declaration, sarva dharman parityaja aham tvam sarva papebhyo. I'll protect you from all sin afflictions, give up all subordinate religious principles. So the first six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita talked about how karma led to bhakti. The middle chapters focused on the glory of bhakti, comparing it with Ashtanga Yoga, with demigod worship, with impersonal Brahman, with Virat Rupa Upasana, all those things. So it was focusing primarily on bhakti. Now, although there is comparison even in the middle sixth chapters of the Gita also, but that comparison is more of with other forms of worship only. See, in Karma Yoga, the focus is not worship. The focus is sort of detachment and detachment and contemplation of how one is inactive while acting. It is renunciation of the fruits of work. In Jnana Yoga, the focus is more on disentanglement through analysis. There is no action. Now, so in that sense, in the middle six chapters when Krishna talks about bhakti, he compares, so bhakti is a form of upasana. And even there can be Brahman upasana, there is Vishwarupa upasana, there is Deva upasana. So Krishna compares those various forms of upasana in the middle six chapters. In the last six chapters, he talks about how jnana culminates in bhakti. Now, how does this exactly happen in the last six chapters? Actually, the essence is that 13.22 talks about how we become bound through the modes because of the desire to enjoy. Isn't it? So, Purusha Prakriti Stohi. And 14.27 talks about how one transcends the modes by bhakti. Mam chayo vibhicharena. So, in a sense, the beginning is because of modes, sangha of modes, guna sangasya, and one goes beyond the modes by bhakti. So, in this way, actually, this process talks about, this central section talks about bhakti. So, in this section, for example, in the 17th chapter, there were no explicit references to bhakti. But the fact that Om Tat Sat is being chanted, that is also a reference to bhakti. 16th chapter also, there were no explicit references to bhakti. But what was talked about was the opposite of bhakti. That is, that those who are envious of Krishna, ma, ahankaram balam darpam kamam krodham cha samshritam mama atma pardeheshu pradvishanto abhyasuyakaha, they are envious of me. So envy is the antithesis of devotion. So in that sense, the terrible destination that the demons get illustrates through converse effect the glory of devotion. That is, papa can lead to certain things, but envy can lead to far greater things. They get cast into hell. So that was what Krishna talked about in 16.18 and 19, how they get cast into hell. And now, 15th chapter was quite clearly about bhakti. So in the last six sections, the last six chapters, the 15th chapter is quite explicitly about bhakti. After Krishna talks about Mamchaya Vicharan in the 14th chapter, then in the 15th chapter, there is the Trishloki Gita, which is very, very clear about bhakti. And beyond that, Yoma Meva Asammudho Janati Purushottama, 15.19 is also very clear. And now in the 18th chapter, as Krishna moves forward, things, the emphasis on bhakti will become more and more clear. Till it will be just not just an emphasis on bhakti, but it will almost like a exclusiveness of bhakti. Just give up everything else. Not exclusiveness in the sense that all other paths are false or important, but that they are not as potent as Krishna bhakti. So, is this clear about the flow overall? Now, let's start with the 18th chapter. Arjuna Vacha. Sanyasasya Mahabaho, Sanyasasya Mahabaho, Tattvamichhami Veditum, Tattvamichhami Veditum, Tyagasya Charishikesha, Agasya Charishikesha, Prithakeshini Sudana, Keshini Sudana. So, like the third chapter, as in the 11th chapter and the 12th chapter, if you see, Arjuna's questions themselves are quite enigmatic sometimes, and you need context to understand the questions. So, sanyasasya mahabaho tattvam icchami veditum. So, icchami veditum is very clear. I desire to know. So, what do I need to know? Sanyasa tattva. What is actually sanyas? What is the meaning of sanyas? I need to know that. And somebody may say, sanyas is very simple. You know, you become sanyasi, that's sanyas. No, I want to understand the difference with Tyagasya Rishikesha Prithakeshini Shudana. So, I want to understand that Prithak means difference. Difference between Sannyasa and Tyaga. And he uses three addresses for Krishna in this verse. Mahabaho, Rishikesha and Keshini Shudana. So, they all indicate how he is aware of Krishna's glory. And he knows that Krishna will actually free from his doubts. Now, the acharyas don't give a direct context for these questions. from the as connected to what was talked about previously. The link is Arjuna still has that background question in the mind, should I act or should I not act? And he wants to know from that perspective what is sannyas and what is tyaga. So let's move forward. Let's see what Krishna says. Kamyanam karmanam nyasam, kamyanam karmanam nyasam, sanyasam kavayo viduhu, sanyasam kavayo viduhu, sarva karma falatyagam, sarva karma falatyagam, prahustyagam vichakshanaha, prahustyagam vichakshanaha. So what is sanyas? Sanyas is kamya karma nyasam. So in one sense, it's a sannyas means to give up, but give up what? Kamya karma. Now, on the other hand, to give up the fruits of all work is tyaga. So let's try to understand this a little bit better. So there are in the Vedic tradition two kinds of karma. There is nitya karma and kamya karma. So nitya karma, now here by the word karma, it doesn't refer to any particular activity. You remember karma talks about? We remember the four meanings of karma which we discussed. The word karma. What are the four meanings? Mechanism of action, reaction. Reaction. Sorry, loudly. You said reaction. Same thing. Result for our action. It's obvious. Now the most obvious meaning is? Action. Any action. That is the third meaning. And last meaning is what is used over here. Here it is actually karma as one category of the three categories, karma, vikarma and akarma. So it's prescribed action, scripturally prescribed action. So here the word karma is used in that sense. So among the scripturally prescribed actions, there are two kinds of actions, nitya karma and kamya karma. So nitya karma is what one is expected to do every day. So the example is Sandhya Vandan. Sandhya Vandan is the daily chanting of the Gayatri Mantras. And for us, for example, it may be chanting 16 rounds or whatever. What we do on a daily basis. And Kamya Karma is when we want a specific result. For that purpose, we do a particular activity. So the example is what, say, Yadashrath Maharaj did when he did not have a son. A Putra Kameshti Yajna. So he wants a son and for that purpose, he does a particular yajna. So, even a sannyasi is not supposed to give up nitya karma. So, vikarma is something which any person within the Vedic Dharma has to give up. And among the karmas, or sukarma, you can use the word to make it more clear. Sukarma, so sannyasi is one who gives up the kamya karma. And in a sense, practically all the activities that a grahastha is doing in his household life come in the category of kamya karma. All means many of them. So ultimately some kama is there and is trying to work to fulfill that desire. So sannyasi gives up that sort of prescribed duty, which is meant for getting worldly results, material results in this world. Now, the tyaga is, Krishna says, sarva karma phala tyaga prahus tyaga vichakshanaha. It is what is known as tyaga or kalma karma does, but one gives up the results. So the way Krishna is using this word sannyas, he is correlating it with sannyasi. A sannyasi, in the sannyas ashram, he gives up the kamya karma but does the nitya karma. And the way Krishna is correlating tyag over here, he says that tyag refers to even a grahastha can be a tyagi. Because when there is tyaga, there is basically the activities are done, but there is no entanglement in the karmic cycle because one is not attached to the fruits of the work. Okay? Is this clear so far? We'll come to this a little bit more in detail as the terms are used further, but as of now. So now, Tyajyam Doshavadityeke, Tyajyam Doshavadityeke, Karma Prahur Manishinaha, Karma Prahur Manishinaha. Yajyadana tapa karma natyajyamiti chapare. So now Krishna will give various opinions before he gives his opinion, which is the conclusive opinion. So he said, what are the various opinions? So some people say, Tyajyam doshavaditye karma prahur manisha. Tyajyam means worthy of giving up. So he says that karma should be given up. Some people say like this. Manishinaha, and he said, it isn't derided their opinions. He said, they are also wise. So these wise people say that karma should be given up. On the other hand, apare means another category of people. What do they say? Yagyadana tapa karma na tyajyam iti cha apare. So first is tyajyam, the other is natyajyam. So basically there are two categories of people Krishna is saying. Some people say that work should be given up, and others who say that yagyadana tapa is something which should never be given up. So now Krishna will go further and he will describe what is his opinion. Nishchayam shrunu me tatra. Tyage bharata sattama, tyage bharata sattama. Tyago hi purusha vyagra, tyago hi purusha vyagra. Trivida samprakirtitaha, trivida samprakirtitaha. So, nishchayam shrunu. So, hear clearly from me, tyage bharata sattama. Oh, Arjuna, please hear from me. And then he uses this word, purusha vyagra. This is the only time this word is used. Vyagra is tiger. So, purusha vyagra is, oh, tiger among men. So, this is, generally speaking, among the domestic animals, the bull is considered to be powerful. So, purusha rishabha. Rishabha is bull. Among the wild animals, the lion, the tiger, the elephant, these are considered to be powerful. So, it's often compared with that. So, purusha vyagra. Trivida samprakirtita. So now Krishna will start the analysis in terms of three modes. He says Tyaga is of three types. Let's see what he says. So now, before Krishna gives his conclusion in terms of three modes, Krishna gives the analysis in terms of three modes. First, he will give his conclusion only. Some people say that yagyadana tapa should be given up. Some people say it should, karma should could be given up. Some people say no. Krishna will tell his opinion here. Then he will give three modes analysis. Yagyadana tapa karma. Yagyadana tapa karma. Natajyam karyam evatat. Natajyam karyam evatat. Yagyodanam tapashchaiva. Yagyodanam tapashchaiva. Pavanani manishinam. Pavanani manishinam. So, natyajyam. So, the question was tyajyam, natyajyam. He says natyajyam. It's not worth giving up. Why? Pavanani manishinam. So, he uses the same word over here. The word was that there are some manishis who say that it is tyajyam. But Krishna says no. Actually, yagyadana tapa is such that it will purify even the manishinas. Those who are very wise, those who are learned. So, as you know, the word Manishina means Isha is controller. So, Manish is the controller of the mind. So, the idea is, who is the controller of the mind? Actually, it's a very wise person. Controlling the mind is not easy, as Krishna has told earlier. So, he uses this word Manishina several times in the Bhagavad Gita. And here he is telling that the Yagyadana Tapa will purify even the wise people. And that's why it should not be given up. Now we'll move forward. And let's see what he says in terms of three modes. Etanya pitu karmani. Sangam tyaktva phalani cha. Sangam tyaktva phalani cha. Kartavyani ti me partha. Kartavyani ti me partha. Nishchitam matam uttamam. Nishchitam matam uttamam. So, nishchitam. This is not mat anishchitam, definite. Krishna had said two verses earlier in the fourth verse, nishchayam shrunume tatra. And again he is saying, nishchitam matamuttamam. This is the nishchit mata. So what should one do? Krishna said previously that doing work will purify. So therefore, sangam tyaktva phalani cha kartavyaniti. Therefore, one should do one's kartavya, do one's prescribed duty without attachment. And this is the best opinion. This is the certain and the best opinion of mine. So the whole purpose of the Bhagavad Gita is to inspire an individual towards action. You remember we discussed earlier about how there is the thesis, antithesis and synthesis. So the idea is, how many of you remember that?
Okay, never all that.
I think we discussed it in the... No, that is different. That is in the 14th, 10th chapter. That is forms of logic. This is a... And there was a European philosopher, Hegel, who sort of proposed this idea. And of course, in principle, in logic, that is an idea which is precedent. But he gave it a sort of systematic exposition. So we will discuss, this will come to later, but okay. So karma, okay, there's some table over here, make it easier. Jnana and Bhakti. So now what is the positive of karma, what is the negative of karma, like that. What is the positive of Jnana and what is the negative of Jnana, like that we'll discuss. So karma means action. So the advantage of action is that it is natural. But the, is it visible to all of you there?
Yes.
Okay. But the disadvantage is that it is binding. On the other hand, jnana is unnatural. Why is it unnatural? Because nahi kaschit kshanam api yatu tishtatya karma krut karyate yavashak karma sarva prakriti jair gunai. Actually, for the soul to stay inactive is very difficult. On the other hand, the advantage, here it is. And the negative of it is that it is unnatural, but the positive is that it is slowly liberating. It takes time, but eventually it will liberate. The advantage of bhakti is that it is natural as well as it is liberating. So I can act according to my propensity, and while acting according to my propensity in Krishna's service, I can become liberated. So the idea is, in logic, there are these three steps of proposition. So first there is thesis, then there is antithesis, and then there is synthesis. Correct. Sorry, I'll just clarify that. Okay, fine. It's clear enough, isn't it? So, here when I bring it over here, so actually what happens is, this is here. So in bhakti, it is natural as well as liberating. So basically, when logic is there, one person proposes a particular argument. That is called a thesis. That is the thesis of that person. And then somebody comes along and refutes that. This is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. So that's the antithesis. So then a third person comes, and the idea is that that person takes the good sides of both and brings about a synthesis that eliminates the negative of both and brings about the positive of both. So that is what actually bhakti does. So bhakti integrates the naturality of karma with the liberating capacity of jnana. And Krishna will eventually come to talk about bhakti in the Gita. But here he is focusing on talking about how don't give up karma. Because giving up karma is, from the philosophical point of view, unnatural. And from the contextual point of view, where Arjuna has to do his prescribed duty of fighting, it is undesirable for him. Therefore, nishchaya is that you should fight. Is this clear? Let's move forward now. Dukkhamityeva yat karma, dukkhamityeva yat karma, kaya klesha bhayatya jet, kaya klesha bhayatya jet, sakrutva rajasam tyagam, tva rajasam tyagam, naiva tyaga phalam labhet, naiva tyaga phalam labhet. So, rajasam tyagam. So, this is rajasityagam. What is it? That dukkhamityeva yat karma. When somebody thinks that it is, there is too much dukkha in this, and therefore I will not do this activity. We missed a verse. Oh, sorry, we missed a verse. That's why. Sorry. We'll discuss this and we'll move forward. So, 7th and 8th. First is tamasik and rajasik. Niyatasya tu sannyasaha. Karmano no papadyate, karmano no papadyate, mohatasya parityagas, mohatasya parityagas, tamasa parikirtitaha, tamasa parikirtitaha. So, niyatasya tu sannyasaha. So, Krishna will use this word. Now, it's interesting that Krishna is talking about, what is he talking about? Is he talking about three types of tyaga or three types of sannyasa? Tyaga, correct. Your next verse, you will see it's clearly tyaga. You recited the word just now here. Naiva tyaga phalam lagait. Sakrutva rajasam tyagam. So now, interestingly, while talking about a category of tyaga, he will use the word sannyasa. So what is he saying? Niyatasya tu sannyasa. So, now Krishna doesn't go into the sort of specifics of Arjuna's questions. He says that, okay, the word sannyasa has some conventional meaning. That means renouncing. Or renunciate. One was renounced. Renouncer or renunciate. So, Krishna keeps to that meaning. And he says that, actually speaking, there is a sannyasa ashram where somebody can be a sannyasi. But along with that, even if a person is not a sannyasi in the sense of being in the sannyasa ashram, but that person is working with detachment, without attachment, and such a person is also a sannyasi. Niyatasya tu sannyasi. So it's always like a sannyasi. Who? Karmano na upapadyate. Actually, what he's saying? Niyatasya tu sannyasa karmano na upapadyate. Actually, one who works with detachment, such a person is always a sannyasi. Karmana na upapattide moha tasya parityaga. So, karma should never be given up, because while doing karma, one is like a sannyasi, if one is detached. But if on the other hand, because of illusion, one gives up one's work. Moha tasya parityaga tamasah parikirtitaha. So, Krishna had earlier described the characteristics of the three modes. Aprakasho pravrittischa mohameva cha pandava. So, Krishna is the same word over here, moha, to describe the action in the mode of ignorance. So, now we could use the word moha in a very generic way, moha maya mein phas gaya hai. But that is, Krishna is using moha here in the sense of characterizing the mode of ignorance. Person doesn't know what he is doing, why he is doing, and just whimsically the person gives up activity. That is in the mode of ignorance. That sort of renunciation will never lead to any fruits. So, then after that Krishna will talk about, we'll discuss about this renunciation a little bit more. So, we recited this verse. So, if somebody thinks my work is very troublesome, dukkham ityeva yat karma, and then that person feels kaya klesha bhaya. And he feels that, oh, actually my body will be very troubled by this kind of work. Sakrutva rajasam tyagam. Such a person is tyagi in terms of rajoguna. And what is the result? Naiva tyaga phalam laghet. The phala of tyaga. So actually, why should one renounce? What is the phala that one is supposed to get by tyaga? Yes. Purification and illumination. One gets knowledge. One gets purification. So Krishna says, if one renounces work just because it, if one finds it troublesome, then such a person will not get tyaga phala. So it's again significant that Krishna uses the same word which he is used earlier for saying that do not be attached to the phala of your work. But then he is saying, if you do this, you will not get the phala of tyaga. So some people say that this Bhagavad Gita's worth ethic is very strange. How can one work if one is not concerned about the fruits? But the idea is, Bhagavad Gita says, don't be concerned about the gross material fruits. We should be concerned about the ultimate fruits. So, so what are the two fruits of work I said? Of renunciation. What should ultimately one get by that? Yes. Purification. Illumination. Illumination means knowledge. So one should get purified and one should get illuminated. One should go become free from material desires and one should get spiritual understanding. So if that is not happening, then there is not much use of that. So sometimes when people get introduced to ISKCON, and nowadays especially the competition is so tough and work is so demanding, that some people will feel that I just want to escape. And one way to escape is by sort of becoming a renunciate. So that sort of attitude, there is the realization that the world is a place of misery, and there is just a miserable experience. They are two different things. If I just get an experience of misery, that doesn't make me a realized soul. Realization is when it's something, you remember we discussed reality, when we accept it internally. When we accept it internally, then it becomes a realization. That's why today morning only I wrote the article how that, you know, bad times test our faith and good times test our faith greater. Because when there are bad times, it's like we have to choose between the world and Krishna. When the world is offering us a bad deal, to choose Krishna is not such a difficult thing. I can choose. Yes, I give up the world and choose Krishna. But when the world offers us a good deal, and that time to reject the world and to choose Krishna, that requires a greater amount of faith. That requires the faith that actually Krishna is better than the best that the world can offer. And that's why I choose Krishna. So, just because one gets some suffering in this world, and therefore one turns towards Krishna. Yena kena prakaran, in one level it is true. And Krishna also says that, Arto, a distressed person comes to me. But then Krishna also says that among the four jnani is the best. Why? Because when the distress goes away, there are two eventualities that may happen. One is that because of distress, if one does tyaga, then once a person joins the Brahmacharya ashram and he finds that there is distress over here also, then what will the person do? You know, which ashram can a person go to after that, isn't it? So, where can one escape? So, if distress alone is the motive for renouncing the world, that is not a sustainable motive. But the other thing that can happen is that whatever the source of distress, that goes away. You know, okay, the economy is very down, I'm not getting a job, so I'll become a brahmachari. And then after that, the economy starts picking up, and you see, look at all the friends, and somebody finds that, oh, my friends are getting such big salary. And then and the person goes back and takes a job. So, distress or trouble, it can be an initial spur, but it cannot be a sustainer. The sustainer will only be our philosophical conviction. Our desire that there is something higher than what the world can offer, and I want to attain that. So that's why talking about dukkha mitti kaya klesha bhaya. Krishna uses two words over it. Dukkha is trouble, misery, and kaya klesha bhaya is more specifically trouble for the body. So misery can be an initial spur, but not a sustainer for renunciation. Even in the material world, actually nothing is sustainable. So even miserable conditions will come and go. Only sustainers are philosophical conviction and devotional attraction. So when I have philosophical conviction that there is something higher than what this world offers us, and I want to achieve that, and for that purpose I give up this world. And devotional attraction, okay, I know there's something higher, but I also have to develop some attraction for that. And then I can continue pursuing that more and more and more. So I need these both. So most people love the finite. Most people love the temporary. And when they become frustrated in their love towards the temporary, the way the modern society with its culture and media is, it offers us so many temporary alternative temporaries that we just keep choosing another temporary object to love. But every person ultimately has to live with hope. Without hope, nobody can live. The day hope dies, the person dies within. And then soon after that, the person will biologically also die. Because the mind will not allow the person to live. So we all need hope. So either our hope can come in the temporary or it can come in the eternal. And if we leave the temporary but really don't have much attraction towards the eternal, then we don't have hope towards the eternal. Then eventually our hope for the temporary will start rekindling. And one will get attracted to the temporary once again. So, in a sense, sometimes people say that when somebody takes renunciation, that person lacks ambition. So in a sense, renunciation is not lack of ambition, but it is super ambition. Why super ambition? Super ambition is not used in a self sort of promotional sense, a self-congratulatory sense. I'll just explain what I mean by super ambition. So, renounce not because what the world offers is too tough to get, but it is too little to get, too little to be satisfied with. I'll just make it not too tough, but too little. So basically, I understand that I am eternal, and whatever the best of whatever the world will offer me, it is temporary. And therefore, it cannot satisfy me. So eventually, when one comes to the some level of philosophical understanding, the jnani level does not mean one person path. The jnani level, not necessarily in the terms of practicing jnana yoga, but getting jnana. At that time, a person understands that everything in this world is temporary. So therefore, yes, it involves trouble pursuing the temporary things, and it's not that I want to avoid the trouble, but that I feel that the end result is not worth the trouble, and there is something higher to achieve, there is something greater to achieve. So the idea is that in material life, the pleasure is not worth the trouble. And in spiritual life, we don't use the word pleasure normally in terms of spiritual life. We talk about happiness or bliss or ecstasy, but I'm just using it here to contrast the two. So we could just use here happiness also. The happiness is worth whatever trouble is required. So actually, for example, if we consider the way Radhanath Maharaj left America in search of God, now, unless one has some very strong desire that there is something greater than this world, one will not give up the world. And even if one gives up the world, actually that craving that there must be something so great that it's worth risking one's life for us. Now, the kind of adventurousness in the search of God that is shown in the scene in Journey Home, that was shown by Maharaj, actually it's something which even materialistic people may hesitate to do. Even when a materialistic person goes out to on some project, that kind of daredevilishness is not easy. Even Srila Prabhupada also, for that matter, his was not so much of seeking, it was for sharing. But the idea is that the whole principle in spiritual life is not avoidance of trouble. It is attainment of something greater and the willingness to take up whatever trouble is required for that. So how does this work out? How does one get the conviction that there is something higher, that there is something beyond this world? Actually, we need two kinds of convictions. First conviction is that what the world offers is not so great. And the other is that what is beyond the world, what is in relationship with Krishna from the bhakti perspective, whatever is beyond the world is so great that I am ready to renounce anything, everything, including the world also. So actually that conviction comes over multiple lifetimes by the practice of spirituality. It may be bhakti or any kind of spirituality. Purvabhyasena tenaiva riyate yavashopi, sir, Krishna described in the 6th chapter. By one's past practice, one develops attraction. And how does that past practice originate? Actually, ultimately, it's by sangha. By association. Association of spiritually minded people, our spiritual inclination awakens. And so therefore, if one is renouncing the world just because one finds it troublesome, one will not be able to stay in that kind of renunciation for long. It may be that that can be one's initial motive. One doesn't have to backtrack because that was one's initial motive. But after one comes to Krishna's lotus feet, then one has to revise one's motives. And one has to recognize that, okay, I'm here for gaining something higher in life. And in devotional life, Krishna says that kaya klesha bhaya. See, we don't want to unnecessarily trouble our body. See now, earlier in the 17th chapter, in verses 5 and 6, Krishna said that karshayanta sharirastam bhuta gramam achetasa. He talks about those people who torment their bodies, who torture themselves. And Krishna says, not only they are suffering, they are troubling me also. I am present in the body and I suffer to see why are these people suffering like this. They don't have to suffer. So there, Krishna has condemned unnecessary torment of the body. But here Krishna says, fear of the trouble of the body is not good. So what is the idea? If fear of trouble of body is necessary for a higher purpose, for purification, for spiritual advancement, then one should be ready to take up that trouble. So therefore, when the kaya klesha bhaya is without any when the kaya klesha is without any purpose, then one should give it up. So I'll just kaya klesha. Klesha is what? Trouble. What is the verse? Tan vidya asura nishchayan. No, and the number is 5-6 only? 5-6, okay, fine. Don't trouble the body unnecessarily. And then this is saying, don't give up duty because of fear of bodily trouble. Due to fear of trouble for the body. So what is not implied, what is the inference over here is that? Necessary trouble. Except bodily trouble when it is necessary for the sake of duty. Okay, so Prabhupada gives this example even in the Tamsitikshasa Bharata verse, that a housewife will have to cook in the home even if it is hot in summers. A dharmic person will take bath with cold water early in the morning even if it is cold. So this is, there is this kaya klesha is also there, but this is necessary kaya klesha, which is a part of one's duty. So in a sense you could say the two examples Prabhupada gives are, in a, the cooking is something which is a part of one's material duties, and taking a bath in the morning is more of one's dharmic duties. But both examples involve kaya klesha, but one does that because then that will lead to purification. Now, how much kaya klesha should we give ourselves? Now, our goal is not to give kaya klesha. Krishna has also talked about yukta ahara viharas. You know, we balance yukta. Our goal is to do our service, and we can take up the service according to how much is our capacity. So, and over a period of time, we learn, okay, if I take too many things, then it causes me trouble. If I took too little, that also causes me trouble. A different kind of trouble. So, therefore, accept bodily trouble when it is necessary for the sake of duty. Any questions about this? Let's look at the next verse and then we will stop. We'll discuss about renunciation or a tyaga in the mode of goodness. Karyamityeva yat karma. Niyatam kriyate arjuna. Niyatam kriyate arjuna. Sangam tyaktva phalam chaiva. Sangam tyaktva phalam chaiva. Satyaga satviko mataha. Satyaga satviko mataha. So, satyaga satviko. This is more in the mode of goodness. Karyam ityevat karma. Karya means it is my prescribed duty. Therefore, niyatam kriyate. Therefore, I'll do it. How will I do it? Sangam tyaktva phalam chaiva. Without attachment to the fruits of work. So, again we see the paradox. Krishna has shown Arjuna in the 11th chapter that you will be victorious. He has shown Arjuna how the enemies, Bhishmam cha, Dronam cha, Jayadratham cha, they are all entering into the Vishwarupa. So in a sense, Arjuna is reassured of victory. At that time he says, yes, they are all killed by my will and you just become an instrument. Tasmatam uttishta. They just become an instrument in my will. But now Krishna is telling that don't act with attachment. So when, if Arjuna knows how they are going to be killed, how can he not be attached to the result? So there are two different things. Actually, the Virat Rupa Darshan is a specific result for that particular activity. So in that particular case, Krishna has promised Arjuna that he will get the result. Now when we do the activity, we may or may not get the result. So Krishna here is giving, Krishna there, the Tasmattam Uttishtha Yasho Labhasva was more like a specific command based on a context. Yes, you are going to win, therefore do not be discouraged, arise and fight. But general principle is that do the your best, but don't be bothered about the result. So Krishna is now talking about general principles over here. And that's why he's telling, Sangam tyaktva phalam chaiva. So this general principle means how one should perform karma yoga. So now when we say start some preaching or we start some new project, we have no guarantee that the result will come out. Krishna has shown in the, not shown in the Virat Rupa that, you know, your opponents are going to be destroyed. We may have to struggle. But for us, Sangam tyaktva phalam chaiva. That just be detached from the fruits. Focus on doing our best for Krishna's sake. Prabhupada, in a sense, got a reassurance from Krishna when he was on the Jaladuta that everything will be arranged. I'm coming with you. But still, Prabhupada did not necessarily get a vision directly showing, okay, there will be 11-story building in New York and there will be this thing in... He did not get or claim any visions like that. But Prabhupada worked and eventually got the results. So we focus on doing our prescribed duty for the pleasure of Krishna, and then we will get the inner result of purification, illumination and devotion, and the outer result will come by Krishna's will. So thank you very much. We'll continue in the afternoon. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhaktavinda ki jai. Gaur Premanandi.